ngubani ubumnandi bethi izinja zakhona thulile nefuthi zishayela phansi fuli volume umntwana lengoma bonini ikhalela phansi aye mina ngizangasemithi please iqalele phansi abo sisi bendawo baningi ngiyabazi bathanda ubumnandi bethi izinja zakhona thulile nefuthi zishayela phansi fuli volume umntwana lengoma bonini ikhalela phansi aye mina ngizangasemithi please iqalele phansi abo sisi bendawo baningi ngiyabazi bathanda ubumnandi bethi izinja zakhona thulile nefuthi zishayela phansi fuli volume umntwana lengoma bonini ikhalela phansi aye mina ngizangasemithi please iqalele phansi abo sisi bendawo baningi ngiyabazi bathanda ubumnandi bethi izinja zakhona thulile nefuthi zishayela phansi fuli volume umntwana lengoma bonini ikhalela phansi aye mina ngizangasemithi please iqalele phansi
Join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-song word.
So I want to start today with something we actually talked about on the bonus show last week. We talked on the bonus show last week, thanks to Pat choosing the story. Quite frankly, I hadn't even read it, which is part of the problem. Joe Biden has quietly almost completely ended the drone war that has become essentially the status quo of American foreign policy to slightly different degrees since George W. Bush, through Barack Obama, and including Donald Trump. And the corporate media has barely mentioned it. As we were talking about it last week, I realized we really should be talking about this more broadly. There's been this bizarre reversal on foreign policy perspectives for the Republican Party, really since Donald Trump started running for president back in 2015, when suddenly Republicans were pretending they don't like war, that they don't like military incursions, that they don't like interventionist foreign policy, when really those have been the hallmark of neoconservative Republicanism for several decades at this point in time. And if you think back, it sort of started with Donald Trump saying that Iraq war, that was a disaster. Trump started with that. And it was always BS. Trump's initial political constituency was heavily made up of people who supported the Iraq war under George W. Bush, and admittedly people who were sort of right-wing, reactionary, but were not really following politics under George W. Bush, either because of their age or because they just weren't paying attention. And so they bought it. They bought it hook, line, and sinker. Trump and Republicans, now they're against war. Then it went to, the leftists who didn't like Hillary started building on it with the Hillary stuff and the Hillary's going to start four wars stuff, and Donald Trump isn't going to do that. That became the story, and it mostly transitioned right into Joe Biden's presidency with this idea that if you reelect Donald Trump, he'll keep us out of war, but if you elect Joe Biden, it means that more wars are coming. Biden was going to go to war. I mean, I don't even remember now. Biden was going to go to war with North Korea and China and Iran and Russia and all this different stuff. Now, I said at the time, I don't see any appetite from Joe Biden for doing those things. Maybe I'll be proven wrong. But there's another story here that's actually what we're talking about today. One of Barack Obama's biggest foreign policy sort of conflicts with my ideology, and I talked about this all through the Obama administration, was the drone war. Trump continued the drone war massively. He didn't talk about it that much because, remember, it was Hillary who was going to do the war and the bombings, not Trump. But Trump continued Barack Obama's drone war, which was an escalation of George W. Bush's drone war. Now, maybe Bush would have done more if the technology had been more mature at the time. Barack Obama had the benefit of that. But now we have the reality. And the reality is that Joe Biden has almost completely ended the American drone war. Joe Biden's not really saying that much about it. The White House isn't really saying that much about it. Neither is corporate media. But it's a huge, massive story. There was that one strike during the Afghanistan withdrawal, which went horribly wrong. Killed civilians. Just absolute disaster. But Joe Biden has almost completely halted drone strikes and airstrikes in general. We have to call this what it is, which is a foreign policy victory in my mind. And it's also a communications and PR failure by being almost completely silent about it. Under Bush, we started droning. Barack Obama did even more. Donald Trump continued. Huge debate, controversy. But then look at what Joe Biden has now done. Enters office, first of all, sets up a system that requires White House approval for any strike outside of a war zone. And listen to these numbers. In Donald Trump's first 11 months in office, he did 1,600 air and artillery strikes per Air Wars, which tracks drone strikes, in Iraq and Syria alone. Air Wars reports 4 under Joe Biden's first 11 months. Not 400, not 40 or 40, as Joe Biden says, just 4 of them. Strikes in Somalia, down 75% from last year to fewer than 10. No civilian casualties. In Yemen, instead of 18 strikes last year, down to 4. This is a massive change. But the real question is why the Biden White House has been so quiet about it. Is it because the Afghanistan airstrike, the drone strike, went so wrong that they just don't even want to talk about the fact that there is still some droning going on? Is it because it will lead to Joe Biden being called weak by Republicans? Which, of course, remember, under Trump, Republicans claimed they are the ones who don't want to do interventionist foreign policy, strikes, war, etc. But at the same time, the Republican Party has a long history of pointing to Democrats and saying, oh, you don't want to go to war? You don't want to go to Iraq? You don't want to take this person out? That? Well, then you're actually the weak one. Is it a fear of that that's keeping the Biden administration from talking about this major accomplishment more? Is it because Joe Biden doesn't like to brag? I mean, there's a couple people emailed me and said, they said it's not Joe Biden constitutionally. Joe Biden doesn't like bragging, and that's why he's not doing it. He's sort of he's bragged about vaccines. He's bragged about I don't think that that's it. So a few different things here. Number one, of course, there's the reality that sometimes you're droning instead of sending in boots on the ground. And this was a big debate early in the big campaigns under Barack Obama, which was, well, we may be using drone warfare here instead of boots on the ground. And if either way we're going to do damage, do we prefer it be done without boots on the ground? That's not the debate now. Joe Biden's not talking about, he certainly doesn't seem to be thinking about boots on the ground. He's just dramatically reduced drone airstrikes. And we should be glad about that. Let me know your thoughts, number one, about why you don't think it's being talked about by the Biden administration. And maybe just as importantly, number two, why isn't the corporate media covering it? But they may be both related things. In a scene completely beyond parody, beyond satire, and also a horrifying scene, I mean, it's both, a group of white supremacists staged a bizarre rally in Washington, D.C. over the weekend. They wore masks as part of their outfits, or maybe we're supposed to call them uniforms. I don't know. Outfits is a little bit emasculating. And thanks to some kind of issue with U-Haul rental trucks, if you can believe it, some of them ended up being like stranded in Washington, D.C. for hours just based on poor planning. Now, of course, for me, the real story here is, once again, look at how this group of protesters is treated by law enforcement and others compared to so many others at protests around the country. But we're going to get to that in a moment. The story is that about 100 members of what is now called the Patriot Front, if that name doesn't ring a bell, I'll explain that as well in a moment. 100 members of the Patriot Front group rallied in Washington, D.C. near the White House over the weekend. Now, Patriot Front used to be known as Vanguard America, but they changed their name. Why did they change their name? Well, because someone affiliated with Vanguard America murdered a woman in that infamous Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville, Virginia. So Vanguard America was tainted. Now they are Patriot Front. Okay. They were there chanting that they are trying to reclaim America. According to our friend Zach Petrizzo from the Daily Beast, their outfits or uniforms consisted of white gaiters or masks, sunglasses, blue jackets, khaki pants, brown boots, hats, shin guards, and masks. They also had American flags, plastic shields that looked really like toys if you look at the pictures, and snare drums as well. Now, how did police react? Well, police shadowed the group, apparently to prevent conflicts from starting. And there are some who were upset that the police seemed to, in this case, be protecting the protesters, whereas in left-leaning protests, the claim is more antagonistic to the protesters and are instead protecting counter-protesters. Now, I think the reality is more complicated than that. And there is much more that could be said about that. But the funniest part was the completely abortive climax to this thing, where dozens of them got stranded. There were only 100. Dozens ended up stranded because they rented U-Haul trucks to get themselves to the rally, and one of the big trucks couldn't fit all of them, so they waited for hours as the truck made multiple trips. I genuinely have been unable to find answers to some basic questions about this rally. Did they have a permit? As many of you know, one of the, it's sort of like the equivalent of resisting arrest for rallies. You know, we've talked before how when police decide they want to make trouble for a particular individual or a particular group, this very vague charge of resisting arrest enters the picture and it's ripe for abuse. Along the same lines, when it comes to rallies or protests whose subject matter some don't like, it becomes, well, did they have a permit for the rally? I don't know the answer, whether they did or did not. Why were they allowed? Because remember, police were shadowing them as they were stranded because of the U-Haul truck issue, and the truck was going back and forth, stuffed with these guys. Why were they allowed to bring masses of people around in U-Hauls, which have no seatbelts for each person in the back, no padding? It's against the law to do that as well. Part of the story of why was this the treatment that these individuals received, rather than fill in the blanks with whatever example you want from protests over the last year and a half, sort of starting with the George Floyd protests in the summer of 2020. Let me know your thoughts. You can find me on Twitter at dpacman. And remember that we've got on December 14th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we will be doing the next David Pacman Show Viewer Town Hall. It'll be streaming live on the Pacman Live YouTube channel. That's the second channel, not the one that these clips are on. It's on the second channel, and it'll be Tuesday, December 14th, 6 p.m. Eastern on the Pacman Live channel. The David Pacman Show is made possible primarily by members who sign up on our website, joinpacman.com. We do an extra show every day for our members. If you like the free show, you'll probably like the extra show. You can also get commercial-free audio and video streams of the show, and it really is not expensive. And if the normal prices strike you as high, which they shouldn't, but if they did, you can use the coupon code BETTER21 to get a huge discount off of the membership of your choice at joinpacman.com. Donald Trump Jr. made a big splash this weekend tweeting that he trusts podcast host, comedian, and MMA commentator Joe Rogan more than he trusts Dr. Anthony Fauci, who heads up the NIH, is the top infectious disease doctor in the United States, has spent his career working on infectious disease. Now, of course, this comes at no surprise that Junior trusts Rogan more than Fauci. Not shocking. But sadly, it's emblematic of a bigger problem in the United States. And you might say, yeah, David, it's called stupidity. Yeah, I know. But I'm going to speak a little more specifically. When it comes to authority and expertise, there is now a particular problem in the United States. There is a logical fallacy called the appeal to authority. Appeal to authority is a fallacy where one claims something must be true because it comes from someone believed to be an authority on that subject. Now, you might say, well, authorities on subjects are more trustworthy. That's exactly the point, and I'm going to get to that. As I've said before, a little bit of knowledge can be a dangerous thing. And now that these radical zealots heard about the appeal to authority fallacy, or they might not even know that's what it's called, but just experts don't know everything, okay? They are often quick to say, experts, schmexperts, that's an appeal to authority fallacy. Now, of course, there are two important details about the appeal to authority fallacy. First of all, it's only a fallacy if you claim that something must be true only on the basis of a certain person saying it. Then it is a fallacy. It might still be true, but it is the fallacy. Secondly, if someone is actually an authority on the subject matter, it's not a fallacy unless, again, it's the idea that only on that basis of it being believed that someone is an expert. So given, to put it a way that makes more sense, given two competing hypotheses about some phenomenon, one from an actual expert, a real expert, and one from a layperson, absent some specific reason, an evidentiary reason, to believe the expert is wrong, erring on the side of thinking the actual expert may be the one who's right here is not a fallacy. That's different than the appeal to authority fallacy. And this is unfortunately incredibly common right now on COVID. The actual experts are written off by a misunderstanding of this fallacy. Now, there's another problem here. The same ignorant people who misunderstand this fallacy will often reverse it, and they will end up saying, this doctor has the right view on COVID, and it's a doctor, so you've got to trust them. And then you'll look, and it'll be like Scott Atlas, a radiologist who knows nothing about infectious disease, or it's a chiropractor, which it's a type of doctor, but it's not an MD, and it's certainly not an expert in infectious disease. So that's one layer to this. Before I get to the other layer, it is ironic, maybe more like disgusting, that the right loves to criticize when they know what it's called. The right loves to criticize the postmodern attitudes of some on the left, that everyone's opinion is valid, all perspectives must be allowed, and on and on. Something I disagree with, but the right loves to caricature all the left as believing that. And here they are doing a version of it, which is saying, well, you've got an infectious disease doctor. Okay, well, that's one thing. And then you've got, I don't know, a podcast host. That's another. It is valid for me to say I trust the comedian more than I trust the doctor. Now, of course, Don Jr. is allowed to say it. But when they say there's an empirical reality and that's what's so wrong with this perspective on the left, this postmodernist perspective of it's all valid, listen, well, if you're going to be critical of that, then you have to be able to look inward and say, I'm kind of doing the same thing here when I say, no, we must allow Rogan's view to be just as valid from an evidentiary standpoint as Dr. Fauci's. They will never look within themselves. They will never do that. Now let's get to the second kind of problem here. The same ignorant people who, so we've talked about layer one, which is Junior says he trusts Rogan more than Fauci. Okay, so that's like one layer. The same false authority applies to Don Jr. weighing in on this. And what I mean by that is there are people in this country who will also trust Joe Rogan over Fauci because Don Jr. said it. Okay, so that this is like a second layer. It's like concatenated expert confusion, or like Russian dolls, you know, those Matryoshka dolls, one goes inside the other, of expertise confusion. Don Jr. misanalyzes the expertise of Rogan versus Fauci on COVID, and then others in turn misanalyze Don Jr.'s expertise on identifying who's more trustworthy on COVID. And that's where it really gets ugly. So to make an analogy, imagine, I don't know, see, he would never do this, but imagine Sam Cedar said, I trust Pacman more than Rogan on MMA. Well, Sam misunderstanding expertise because I don't know a damn thing about MMA and Joe Rogan does. But then trusting Sam to ascertain whether I or Joe Rogan know more about MMA is that second layer, and that's what we're talking about. And unfortunately, the Trump family looked upon almost like deities by many in this country, and they are immediately taken to the idea that, well, if Don Jr. has assessed that Rogan is more trustworthy than Fauci, then that's good enough for me. You get it. Bottom line is, we're in real trouble. That's essentially the takeaway here. We have seen a ton of bad analogies during the pandemic from Republicans. Vaccines are like Nazi medical experiments conducted by Josef Mengele. Vaccine cards, proof of vaccination, it's like a Nazi yellow star that they made the Jews wear during the Holocaust. Or last week or the week before, we heard Sherry Tenpenny say, vaccinating a kid is like a very late-term abortion because you're killing the kid with the vaccine. It's a very long list of these bogus analogies. I'm not going to go through all of it right now. But the theme is absolutely horrifying, disgusting analogies that make no sense whatsoever. We now have another one from radical, rabid, reprehensible Republican ranter Marjorie Taylor Greene. And this time, she's comparing COVID to cancer in thinking about how societally we reacted to the pandemic. And you might say, wait, sir, hold on, what? How is, what, huh? Yes, she's doing it. Marjorie Taylor Greene tweeted over the weekend, every single year, more than 600,000 people in the U.S. die from cancer. The country has never once shut down. Not a single school has closed. And every year, over 600,000 people of all ages and all races will continue to die from cancer. Now, of course, you all in the audience, because you're so smart, because it's so obvious, you realize COVID is a contagious, communicable virus. Cancer is not contagious. That's the analysis. That's it. But there is there's no more analogy here. But there are some other interesting aspects to this that I think are worth thinking about. We do spend, is it millions? Is it hundreds of millions? Is it billions to try to control the development of cancer, to try to understand what causes it when there are cancers of known cause, public policy to try to prevent it? I mean, you know, we've got a lot of regulations about cigarettes, where you can smoke, taxing cigarettes, et cetera, higher life insurance cost if you smoke, how much pollution factories can pump out, which causes cancer downstream. Okay, at some level, it's because it causes cancer. Much more to it, of course, but we do a ton of stuff to try to stop cancer, which is not contagious. Sometimes we do close schools permanently because of asbestos, right? So even when Marjorie Taylor Greene says we don't close schools over cancer, we kind of do. I mean, it's just one example, but buildings get shut down because of asbestos, which causes mesothelioma. Given that, why wouldn't we be doing a ton of stuff to try to stop something like cancer that kills people? But in this case, it's something you can get from being sneezed or coughed on. COVID can also kill you, and you can get it by someone who walks by and sneezes on you, which you can't with cancer. And when I saw this, I thought, man, this is really dumb. But then I thought, wait a second, we should be doing more to prevent cancer. And interestingly, we have shut down schools. We do things. We pass significant public policy. And then I realized, hey, you know what? Preventing cancer is really tough, especially for cancers that we don't yet understand the cause of, which is many. With the virus, we know the cause. We know how it's transmitted. We have a playbook, and it's a simple one. Vaccines, masks where appropriate, testing, sequencing, etc. We know the plan. So in the end, yes, it's a very dumb tweet. But it's a tweet Marjorie Taylor Greene thinks will get us to say, wow, COVID guidelines, these are bad. We shouldn't be doing any of this stuff. When you really think about it, layer one is that's really stupid. Cancer is not a communicable disease. When you go to layer two, it makes me think, wow, in the case of COVID, we know exactly what the causes are, and still so many people don't do the basic things to stop its spread. Whereas with cancer, with many cancers, we don't know what causes it. At the end of the day, the problem is that stupidity does seem to be contagious. People see these tweets, and some think that they're good arguments, and they repeat them. And in the end, they don't get vaccinated. They don't do the things that we're supposed to do in order to stop the spread of this disease. Now, I'm not even getting into it in this segment. We will get into it. What's happening with COVID right now is bonkers. And it's not even clear that it is yet because of Omicron. We're going to get to that maybe later today, maybe tomorrow. In the meantime, more on this on our Instagram, where you can find us at David Pakman Show. You can also follow me on Instagram at David.Pakman. We'll take a quick break and be right back. So to a degree that is now even surprising me, and I've been following this for a while, COVID is now the Republican virus in the United States. Now, liberals are still dying, and we're going to look at the data in a moment. But that's not exactly the point here. The vaccine uptake and mass guidelines have become so partisan and so skewed politically that the cumulative death rate, particularly since the vaccines have been widely available, I guess we roughly May of 2021, is now a 3 times higher death rate in counties that voted 70% for Donald Trump compared to counties that voted only 30% to Donald Trump. This is, it's stunning from a sort of disconnected analytical perspective. And it's a tragic data set when we think about the unnecessary life that's been lost. And even if they don't care about people dying, this should be a wake-up call for Republicans if they care about future elections. Listen to this from NPR. Since May of 2021, people living in counties that voted heavily for Donald Trump during last election have been nearly 3 times as likely to die from COVID than those who live in areas that went for now President Joe Biden. We have some of this data visualized. People living in counties that went 60% or higher for Trump had a 2.7 times higher death rate than those that went for Biden. Counties with an even higher share of the vote for Trump saw even higher COVID-19 mortality rates. For example, in October, the reddest 10th of the country saw death rates 6 times higher than the bluest 10th of the country. It is absurd to a degree that is even surprising me at this point in time. Now, over the last few weeks, the gap has shrunk a little bit, but in those super red versus super blue counties, it's still a 5.5 times higher death rate. Absolutely incredible. Now, let's go through some of the talking points that you will hear from the right. Mostly the talking point on these numbers is you've got to control for age. Republicans are on average older. Republican counties are on average older. And the age difference explains the difference in death rates. And the response is, no, it does not. Even when controlling for age, this is the trend. Dramatically higher death rate in Trump counties rather than Biden counties. Now, on the other flip side of this, going back to what we talked about with Marjorie Taylor Greene earlier, the higher the Trump vote share, the lower the vaccination rate. This is not like cancer, even though Marjorie Taylor Greene said, we don't shut down for cancer. This is not like cancer in that. With cancer, we don't know the causes of many types of cancer. Cancers, with many we do, with many we don't, many different types. Here we know, and the trend is clear, more vaccination, lower death. And we also see more Trump vote, lower vaccination rate. These are the Trump vaccines, as they like to say. Trump came up with them. Trump wants you to believe he synthesized, sequenced the virus himself. And his voters still don't want them. Now, obviously, we don't know the politics of the individuals who die. A Biden voter in a red county can still die, and they do. A Trump voter in a blue county can still die, and they do. But the association here is extreme, and it even goes beyond this. It is likely, on the basis of the lower vaccination rate among Republicans, now the lowest vaccinated demographic group in the United States, that even the deaths in the blue counties probably skew towards Republicans relative to their share of the population. A lot of right-wingers call me on my voicemail and they say, David, why are you, they don't say David, sir. No, they just say David or even worse names. Why aren't you talking about how black people won't get vaccinated? And every time I check the numbers to see, has something changed? And it hasn't. Black folks, do have a lower vaccination rate than some other groups, but it is still significantly higher than the vaccination rate among Republicans. Republicans are now the largest unvaccinated group. There is no single demographic factor when you look at gender, race, educational level, across all of these. Being a Republican right now is the signal that you are most likely to be unvaccinated right now. Now, at some point, the public health tragedy that has been this pandemic could become a political tragedy for Republicans if they keep going with the current approach. I'm not giving them advice. My concern is I care about people's lives regardless of their politics. And as we've said before, your decision not to get vaccinated doesn't only put you at risk, but we're beyond that. If Republicans care about election strategy, you would think that they'd be saying it's not good for us to disproportionately lose more of our voters than they are losing of theirs. I don't know what it'll take to get them to change their tune. There continues to be a real and serious problem in the United States regarding access to mental health services, undiagnosed mental illness, untreated mental illness. And over the years, we've covered conspiracy theories and conspiracism and cultish thinking, cult-like thinking, by interviewing all sorts of different experts. And they've told us about the connection that exists to mental illness. Now, this doesn't mean every conspiracy theorist is mentally ill. Not at all. That's not what this means. But we've explored in detail the connection that exists there and how sometimes delusional paranoia and schizophrenia or whatever, it will lend itself to be captured by whatever the conspiracy theory of the day is, and it can create some confounding factors in figuring out what's going on and why. Okay. In the last few months, QAnon, the conspiracy group, has been increasingly focused on going out to Dealey Plaza in Dallas, Texas. That's the site, of course, where former President John F. Kennedy was assassinated in 1963. And something really interesting and kind of bizarre developed. Some of these people have started to say JFK Jr. is actually still alive. This is the late son of JFK, the former president. This is an important detail. JFK and JFK Jr., two different people. JFK died in 1963. JFK Jr. died in 1999. Two different people. This is sort of fringe, even for some of the QAnon people. Like, only some of the QAnon people believe this. But the idea is JFK Jr. is still alive. Now, the bulk of QAnon is based on the idea that Donald Trump was, in parentheses, sent by God. Sometimes it's sent by God, sometimes not. Donald Trump was sent to fight a Satan-worshipping group of child traffickers, mostly Democrats, among other things. That's the big piece. There's an offshoot of QAnon that believes that JFK Jr. is still alive based on, I don't even know what, might be numerology, hard to understand it. So that gets us to this past weekend, where there was like a, it was like a holiday QAnon rally, parade of some kind in Dallas, Texas. And I'm going to play a short video here where you're going to watch and you're going to be able to hear protesters saying JFK is alive. Two people say JFK is alive. And then someone else says JFK Jr. too. They seem confused about which JFK is supposedly still alive. And some of them apparently are saying that it's both. Take a look at this insane video.
JFK is alive. You'll find out.
You'll find out, Karen Shibnesia. Yeah.
So now JFK is still alive. I hadn't even heard that before. What do you think is more likely? They don't know the difference between JFK and JFK Jr. And so they heard some Q people saying JFK Jr. is alive. They don't realize that that's JFK's son. And so they're just saying JFK. That's one possibility. The other possibility is they genuinely believe that it's JFK and not JFK Jr. that's the one that's actually alive. Option three is some other type of confusion that is, you know, good luck figuring out what it is. Now, again, JFK was the former president assassinated in 1963. If he were alive today, he'd be 104 years old. It's possible. It's not particularly likely. Even if he did somehow die in 1963, even if he somehow didn't really die in 1963, figured out a way to stay alive without anyone knowing, everybody was in on it, nobody spilt the beans, he'd be 104 years old today. Not super likely based on actuarial tables for men born in 1917 when JFK was born. On the other hand, JFK Jr., also known as John John, he died in 1999 in a plane crash and would be 61 today. Way more plausible. Neither is true. They're both dead. But if you're going to posit that one of them is actually still alive, I would go with the guy who would be 61, not with the guy who would be 104. No evidence of either, but statistically more possible. These people are really confused. And to the extent that they are not violent, seeing this is more sad than anything else. The problem is, increasingly there's the concern that the QAnon people, when none of it comes true, because now they're at years of none of this stuff coming true, there is the concern that as their predictions continue not to come true, they will go over the line into some kind of Jonestown-type mass suicide, maybe even taking other people down with them. Let's hope not. Let's hope not. But JFK confusion at Dealey Plaza over the weekend. I have to tell you, there are stories we do on this show which are extremely multifaceted in terms of what they mean geopolitically, sociologically, all these different things. And sometimes there is just a story that is too funny at an absolute basic level. You all know about the big lie. At this point, I'm sure this is the lie that Joe Biden didn't really win the 2020 election. Donald Trump really won it. It's something Trump and his followers have been pushing really since even before the 2020 election, talking about mail-in ballot fraud before the election even took place. No evidence for any of it. But then they really got going with this stuff on election night when Trump came out at 2 a.m. and said, "We've basically won, it's over," when that wasn't the case. And of course, a couple of days later, it was confirmed. Actually, Joe Biden is the one who won. The claims range widely from they stole votes digitally with hackers or who knows, dead people voted, the mail-in ballots were fraudulent, all these different ideas. No evidence for any of it, of course. Over the weekend, the former president put out another one of these unhinged statements, which now are appearing really just on his website because he's banned on Twitter and he's banned on Facebook and all of it. And it actually is, I would argue, I'm going to propose to you, this is the most unifying statement that Donald Trump has ever made as a result of grammatical error. There's really no other way to put it. Donald Trump's statement says, and I'm just going to read it to you as written, and then we're going to unravel the grammar of it. You really have to pick it apart. Trump says, "Anybody that doesn't think there wasn't massive election fraud in the 2020 presidential election is either very stupid or very corrupt." This is a Trump statement I can agree with. Now, let's break it down. You have to really take apart the grammar, okay? So Trump says, "Anybody that doesn't think there wasn't fraud is corrupt or stupid." So if Trump had said, imagine, this is the way I unravel these double negatives. If Trump had said, "Anybody that thinks there wasn't fraud is stupid," that's really easy. You don't think there's fraud, you're stupid. When Trump says anybody that doesn't think there wasn't fraud, Trump is saying, if you believe that there's fraud, if you believe the big lie, that's a double negative. You're stupid or corrupt. And that is exactly right. It actually took, I was looking over the weekend, I was saying, okay, so wait, if you don't think it wasn't, this is a statement that I agree with. Now, sure, double negative phrasing is kind of weird, but Trump is finally correct about something here. And this is, of course, the ultimate self-own, saved by syntax, bizarrely enough. And it's surreal in some weird way when you think that this guy had the nuclear codes for 4 years. Could this be the subconscious truth that Trump actually believes? That if you've fallen for his lies, you are the stupid or corrupt one. Does Trump simply have no idea how double negatives work? And in a sense, it's the perfect unifying message. If you're able to unravel the double negative the way we've just done, and you understand it, you agree. If you're not able to unravel the double negative, maybe you also fell for the voter fraud lie to begin with. And so you also agree with this statement. It's incredible that he has figured out a way to really make a unifying statement that just about everybody will believe. And we're supposed to believe that he genuinely earned good grades at the University of Pennsylvania. So there it is. If he does get back on Twitter, it will be a very, very dark day. If there are kids watching today, I would send them out of the room before I play for you what I'm going to be playing for you right now. I have some cursed video and audio to play for you today. I don't know how many of you remember or even knew a very strange factoid, which is that there is a pro-Trump movement in the country of Japan. And we've, during previous live streams, I played video of these pro-Trump rallies in Japan, some with very strange costumes related to Trump. It's a bizarre, bizarre thing. But if you didn't know that, certainly a fact you can get through life without knowing. But alas, there is some pro-Trump cultishness in Japan. And there's even an event called CPAC Japan. Now, CPAC is the Conservative Political Action Conference. It's an event at least once a year. I could have sworn that some years they've done it twice. All sorts of right-wing speakers. It's a gong show of absurdity and pablum for the right-wing masses. Well, there is a CPAC Japan. The movement in Japan is so big that they have their own CPAC there. It was this past weekend. And this time around, the conference had such illustrious speakers as Jim Jordan, Mac Warner, not even Mark Warner, who's a Democrat, by the way, Mac Warner, Republican Secretary of State of West Virginia, then a whole bunch of other people I've never heard of, and I would bet money you haven't heard of either, and Donald Trump speaking to them remotely. Donald Trump recorded an introduction video for the event. It's so bizarre. It's cursed. It could give you nightmares, which is why I say don't show this to children. It's scarier than many horror movies. I am sort of likening it to Silence of the Lambs crossed with The Shining. That's the best sort of combination that I could use to describe it. So let's look at this short clip. See if you can pick out all the things that are bizarre about this video.
I'd like to begin by thanking everybody. It's been so friendly to the United States. We have an incredible relationship with Japan, and we have for a long time. I'd like to congratulate Jay Aiba, the head of the Japanese Conservative Union. They're working together with us, and Matt Schlapp and Mercedes Schlapp with CPAC in the United States has been really a powerful force. Our relationship with Japan has been incredible. I worked with, as you know, Prime Minister Abe for a long time, and we worked strongly together on North Korea and on so many other problems, including problems, frankly, with China. It was my honor to help. Our relationship in terms of trade has doubled. We've gone into a stratospheric mode. It's been really rather incredible to see what's happened between the United States and Japan over the 4 years that I was the President of the United States. So I'd just like to say I hope everyone's having a fantastic time. You're with my friends, and you are my friends. And congratulations on your tremendous success. I look forward to being in Japan shortly. And when I am, I will stop by and say hello. Have a wonderful evening.
So some truly cursed images of Donald Trump. The camera is so far from the guy. Why is that? It looks like some kind of strange horror movie cinematography. The audio's terrible. As usual with these recent Trump videos, there's not even a mic on him. The stuff that he's producing down in Florida, they don't even mic him up. Camera's 20, 30 feet away. You can barely hear him. He's in a gaudy ballroom of some kind. He's wearing a tuxedo. He's facing the camera with his arms down at his sides, hinging forward at the waist the way he often does. Everything is weird. He's kind of twitching and making strange body movements. There is nothing normal about this video. But also notable, even in this strangest of strange videos, Donald Trump can't even tell basic factual truths. What was the one sort of substantive element of that video? Trump saying, we've doubled trade with Japan. We have not doubled trade with Japan. Does Donald Trump not realize that the data is widely available? Does he assume no one will care? Does he not realize he's lying? I don't know. But if you look, and we're putting it up on the screen now, if you look back at the last 20 years of trade with Japan, you see that it's actually been really steady. In 2009, at the sort of bottom of the Great Recession, it declined. But otherwise, trade with Japan has been notably steady. There has been no doubling here. And this is considering both imports and exports. So what's the concern here? Because it's very easy to laugh at Trump and see him doing these weird videos and say, oh, he's just a loser past his prime. And he is. And he is. Tomorrow, in fact, we're going to look at video of every once in a while at his club, Mar-a-Lago. They do weddings at Mar-a-Lago. Sometimes Trump will like walk into a wedding, or he'll walk into the dining room or whatever, and he will speak to the crowd. And often he'll start talking about the big lie. He'll start lying about the election or whatever. And it's really, really weird. Tomorrow we're going to look at video of Trump doing exactly that. So it's all fun and games, and the guy's a loser and nobody's paying attention to him in any kind of serious way. But every poll so far suggests that he would still win the Democratic, the Republican primary, and he would win it easily. The only guy polling even anything of note was Ron DeSantis when there was the most recent straw poll. And so as much as we laugh, it would be even more devastating if again the guy is able to win in 2024. Too many people, when it was Hillary versus Trump, said, she's not going to lose. She's got it. She doesn't need my vote. I'm not going to vote at all. Or maybe I'll vote third party. Or maybe I'll even vote Trump as a goof because Hillary's got it. And look at where it got us. Three Supreme Court justices, maybe the end of Roe v. Wade, one of the most humiliating mishandlings of COVID globally, and on and on and on. So as absurd as it is to see Trump relegated to yelling at dinner guests at Mar-a-Lago or doing bizarre videos like this, most of the Republican Party, based on the polling we have, would put him right back where he was for 4 years. And that's a horrifying reality. Hey, this is exciting. We have possibly a new top voicemail caller. You can call my voicemail anytime. 219-2-DAVID-P is the number. This guy is straight out of Central Casting. You've got to listen to this. Just no introduction. Just take a listen. Right.
I mean, I listen to you a lot of times. I do listen to you in this cable thing. Anyway, I'm just calling you that you talk a lot of garbage. I don't know. You sound like the president. Talk a lot of nonsense things. That it's all lies. Same thing with you. The thing I don't understand, how could you not...
I'm pretty sure this is real, guys. We looked up who this actually is. This is really a guy from where he sounds like he's from. It appears to be completely real.
Talk about this guy that is the worst president and the worst vice president we got in this country. Worse than Ronald Reagan. I mean, excuse me, my language. what's that guy's name? Jimmy Carlo.
That may have been a Freudian slip there. Maybe he really does think Reagan was terrible, but he doesn't want to admit it.
Excuse me. Why you don't talk about this guy that he's a bad president? He's killing his country. Guesses up that the people coming over this country illegal.
And these things are always funny because, you know, when you really break down, this guy's a character, he's funny, but when you break this stuff down, the gas prices, they have nothing to do with Joe Biden. When they were low under Obama, I wasn't praising Obama. When they were high under Trump and then low under Trump, I wasn't blaming Trump. It's just the president has barely anything to do with gas prices. The border situation has barely changed since Donald Trump left and Joe Biden took over. You know, it's funny, but this is weaponized disinformation into this guy now who believes all these things that aren't true.
Forget he's ruining this country so bad that he don't even say nothing about it. Talk about Trump all the time. Trump. You must be in love with this guy. Talk about the president, the vice president. You got a clown and the joker. They don't belong to sit in there. They belong in the circle.
Now, of course, not only have I been so critical of Joe Biden in some areas that many of my own viewers say, David, you got to be easier on Biden. But I praise the guy when he does things right, like almost single-handedly ending the drone war, as we talked about at the top of the show today.
This guy is a real clown.
Right.
He's worse than Jimmy Carter. We passed the guy. This guy, and you don't talk bad about this guy at all, him.
We do.
Junkie son, nothing. How about you put this in the air one of these days?
Now, junkie son, you know, junkie's not a term I use. But again, Hunter Biden has nothing to do with the Biden administration. What do people want me to say?
You know, if I'm listening to it, if I'm watching, you know, because, you know, every time I listen to you, I'm telling you, you don't sound nothing like a, I don't know. You sound like a guy that doesn't know what the hell he's talking about.
Then don't watch, you know? I mean, people get upset. There's so many shows out there that I think are trash. I don't watch a single one of them.
When you got a stupid president, a stupid, a joke, vice president, to me he's a joker. I don't know. And then you got the other guy, the love boy there. I don't know where you get these people from, and you don't ever say nothing bad about these people.
Who's the love boy, by the way? Anybody know what that's about?
You must love them. They are the worst vice president in this country. And I can't stand every time I see these two clowns, I feel like I could break the TV right in their faces.
Wow.
You know, I don't wish nothing to the guy, but everybody's dying every day with this coronavirus, and he's got blood in his head. All these Marines he killed. For no reason. He could have got these guys out. No problem. Nothing. Instead, he preferred to kill the 13 kids. For no reason. And they still got hostage over there. You don't say nothing.
All right, okay. Now we're just, it's gotten very, very boring. But that is a fascinating caller. That is straight out of Central Casting. Of course, not making a single good political point, but certainly saying it in a very, very funny way. We have a great bonus show for you today. We will talk about the death of Bob Dole, a giant of the Senate, 1996 Republican presidential nominee against Bill Clinton in the eventual reelection of Bill Clinton. An interesting guy has passed away. We will talk about Bob Dole. Debt collectors can now text, email, and direct message you on social media. Debt collector, a very interesting profession, and I cringe a little bit at calling it that. A lot of scams in the world of debt collecting. We are going to talk about it on today's bonus show. And also, in addition to learning that Stacey Abrams is going to be running again for governor in Georgia, as a Democrat, of course, we are now learning that David Perdue, the former Georgia senator, Republican, who lost to John Ossoff, is going to be challenging incumbent Republican Governor Brian Kemp. That's also very interesting. Kemp presumably would be the less Trumpy of the two candidates. We're going to talk about how that race is going to break down on today's bonus show. Do not miss today's bonus show. Get instant access by signing up at joinpacman.com. You can use the coupon code BETTER21 to save a bundle. And also remember that our members at joinpacman.com get priority access to me during the upcoming viewer town hall, December 14th, 6 p.m. Eastern, on the Pacman Live YouTube channel. That's it for today's show. See you on today's bonus show.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Techno Land? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Word to your mother.
RCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
My fellow Americans, I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
WRCT, in sound, from way out.
Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding...
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
What we've seen over the last couple of weeks is the shareholders of Pfizer and Moderna making an absolute fortune on these vaccines, when actually we should be treating them as a public good, ensuring that everyone's vaccinated so we can get over this pandemic as quickly as possible.
As nations brace for a new surge of coronavirus cases due to the Omicron variant, a new study shows the top 8 Pfizer and Moderna shareholders made $10 billion last week as their stock holdings soared. This comes as the Biden administration stalled on its promises to implement a $2.5 billion plan to thwart Omicron-like variants. We'll get the latest. Then the Biden administration's resumed Donald Trump's Remain in Mexico program after being ordered to do so by a judge. Human rights advocates warn the policy puts asylum seekers in grave danger.
So every once in a while, there's an incident like what happened in Del Rio that really brings that to the forefront of people's minds. But we really need people to understand the really grave danger that people are being placed in when they're turned away at the border or returned to Mexico under a policy like this.
Plus, we look at how the nation's first supervised drug injection sites have opened in New York City in a bid to fight a rise in overdose deaths. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The Justice Department sued Texas over its heavily gerrymandered political maps, charging Republican lawmakers drew new districts that favor white voters despite the rapid growth of Black and Latinx communities in Texas. Associate Attorney General Vinita Gupta said Monday the new maps show clear signs of discrimination.
Texas will gain 2 new congressional seats because of its population growth, almost all of which is due to growth in the state's minority population. However, Texas has designed both of those new seats to have white voting majorities. The congressional plan also deliberately reconfigured a West Texas district to eliminate the opportunity for Latino voters to elect a representative of their choice. This is the third time in 3 decades where Texas has eliminated a Latino electoral opportunity in this same district, despite previous court determinations that this violates the law.
This comes a month after the Justice Department sued Texas over its recently passed voter suppression law, saying it illegally targets Texans of color, voters who don't speak English, and voters with disabilities. New York City will require all private employers to mandate their workers get vaccinated against COVID-19 by December 27th with no testing option as an alternative. It's the most aggressive vaccine mandate yet by any state or big city in the U.S. Mayor Bill de Blasio said the mandate could help prevent a winter surge of new infections.
I describe the actions we're taking today as a preemptive strike. Get ahead of this problem before it deepens and use the thing that works, vaccination.
Nearly 90% of New York City adult residents have at least one vaccine dose, a higher rate than the national average. This comes as COVID-19 cases, hospitalizations, and deaths continue to rise rapidly nationwide. The official U.S. death toll from the pandemic is now on pace to pass 800,000 by the end of the year. President Joe Biden's meeting today with Russian President Vladimir Putin amidst growing tensions over Russia's buildup of estimated over 100,000 troops along its border with Ukraine. The Biden administration says it's responding by sending reinforcements to NATO allies in Eastern Europe. On Monday, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said the U.S. was prepared to sanction Russia if it launches an invasion of Ukraine.
On financial sanctions, we have consulted significantly with our allies and believe we have a path forward that would impose significant